Welcome, everybody, to episode 332 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby. And, John, did you receive your presidential alert at 2:18?
It was the best presidential alert I think I've ever received. It was exactly everything that I'd hoped it would be, considering that I have pretty much thoroughly blocked all other forms of presidential alerts across the internet. I was really excited to see that there was this like unblockable ability for to receive really important communications from our United States president, such as test. That meant a lot to me. That
you know, it would have been awesome if like it came with a GIF of Donald Trump opening up that thing that's become a meme, and it says, "This is a test."
Right. That is
to everybody.
How silly! And so I even had, you know, in iOS, and I'm not sure about Android, but I imagine it's the same thing. Where on iOS you can toggle the like emergency alerts on and off. Like you can turn off the amber alerts, you can turn off the emergency alerts, and I had mine off. And I still received the alert.
That's good. Got to keep you in the know, just in case.
And then to make it extra jarring, when it hit my Apple Watch, it like did like a crazy vibrate. It did like a like thing where I was like, oh, something really important is happening. And then I saw the title was presidential alert. It was like, ugh, I forgot about that.
I mean, I knew there was going to be a test today, but when I saw it and it said presidential alert, I said, well, that's why does it say presidential alert? Why doesn't it just say this is a test? So
that was my whole thing.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, at 2:18 p.m. Eastern time today, they tested the National Wireless Emergency System, and it said presidential alert. So I kind of wish I was in like a Walmart or somewhere where there's a lot of people and just hearing bzz, 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 and all the different beeps going on the phones.
So it resulted in like we all in our shared office had a minute because we all kind of opened the doors like, what happened? Because I knew it was coming, but it had completely – it's so non-important that I hadn't even considered like, oh, well, I should talk about this. Like, no, I don't really care. And so we all kind of peeked out of our offices like, did you just get dumbest thing in the world like I just got? And like, of course we did. And so then like we could hear people's phones and stuff going off downstairs in the cafe beneath us where we're like, oh gosh, like what a productivity suck.
Well, it's like, only dumb because when you looked at the screen, it didn't say nuclear launch detected.
Well, no. Well, hopefully that's never a thing that anyone has to experience, right, Jeff. But just like the amount, like everywhere, restaurants, construction workers, baristas, coders, designers, doctors, lawyers, everywhere are all going to get test. Like, come on.
This is a presidential alert, Jeff Rose.
Oh, it's so stupid.
Anywho.
So dumb. So
we've got stuff to talk. We're supposed to have Vova Feldman on today, but we're going to reschedule that for later this month, hopefully, and talk about a new sort of what he's been going through in the last 3.5 years with Freemius. I can't believe it's been that long already.
That's pretty wild.
I remember when he was talking to me about the idea at Prestige in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a couple of years ago. And so we'll talk to him about what's been going on over there and a new program that they're launching for plugin and theme developers on Freemius. That'll be hopefully later this month. So today, we're going to spend some time talking about some of the headlines. I mean, to be honest, I'm looking around, and there's not a lot going on outside of Gutenberg and a couple of other things. It's just there's nothing that's catching my eye. There's nothing that I've seen that's worth writing about or, you know, wanting to jump up and down and yell at to the masses. But there are a couple of things that we need to talk about. And we'll start off
thing that's not on our agenda, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah, I want to know. I want to know what lines you're reading in between. Hopefully, we'll get into that later in the show. That's always good stuff. Mm-hmm. But we'll start off with an article written on the Tavern by Sarah Gooding that says WordPress theme developers begin marketing themes as Gutenberg compatible, which is something I sort of noticed as well on ThemeForest. But if you take a look over at ThemeForest, which is a huge marketplace for commercial WordPress themes and plugins on CodeCanyon. They have about 11,000 different products, and they actually now have a specific tag you could search mm-hmm. for Gutenberg compatible theme listing. Simply, the tag name is Gutenberg. So if you search for themes using the Gutenberg term, it comes up with about 139 different products. And I was actually doing this the other day, and I was like, you know, it's kind of interesting how these theme authors are saying, well, it's a marketing point saying that it's Gutenberg compatible, or it's Gutenberg and WordPress 5.0 compatible, or works with Gutenberg out of the box, which I thought was kind of interesting, because how can they say that when 5.0 doesn't even exist yet? Gutenberg doesn't even exist yet. But
that in addition to, we've seen this with BuddyPress and BBPress and WooCommerce already, where sometimes Gutenberg ready means you've done nothing. like Gutenberg ready means we installed Gutenberg and our theme looks the same. It hasn't broken, so here's my Gutenberg tag. Like, that's the freedom of tags in themes, is that there is no there's no filter there. There's no policing that says, like, you're actually 100% supporting Gutenberg. All that theme authors are, they just know, well, this gets me better exposure. I cast a wider net by adding this tag into my theme.
In my opinion, if your theme is Gutenberg or WordPress 5.0 ready, then it supports the center width and the alignment options in Gutenberg, and it has styles for all of the core blocks in Gutenberg. Yep. That to me is pretty much basic compatibility with Gutenberg.
So I agree, but there were a bunch of plugins and themes that would add BuddyPress or BBPress to their tags because it worked with them, but not because they actually supported anything with them. It just didn't break. And so we saw that at least in the early days with BuddyPress and the BBPress, when we used to have a separate, I think maybe we still do it on bbpress.org, but we used to just pull in the BuddyPress tags and then show them in a /plugins directory. It would still all link back to the WordPress.org plugins, but like a BuddyPress plugin or a BBPress plugin just looped through tagged plugins and said, yeah, these are the ones that are available. We trusted that people kind of knew or supported. They understood that by tagging their plugin or theme with BuddyPress meant that they had legitimately built a BuddyPress or BBPress plugin. But more often than not, that wasn't the case. It was someone just jumping on that bandwagon. They put themselves in that extra directory. So not to be the like naysayer of all this, I guess, but this is one of those like easily gamed things that my advice would be, don't add the Gutenberg tag to your theme unless you have actually done the work like Jeff is talking about and made sure that not only does your theme like work with Gutenberg, but it actually does something to integrate with it and support it. Because if all you're doing is adding the tag and going, yep, works great, then you're actually not doing users any good. Users are looking for themes that directly support Gutenberg, not for themes that happen to not break with it. And so don't tag your theme or plugin with Gutenberg unless you've built some kind of integration or support for it. Don't pollute the tag. Let the tag stay useful, because otherwise you might, as a result, not. It has kind of at least has the inverse effect where people go, oh, I expect this to work with BBPress really well. They install it and go, it doesn't do anything. Well, I'm never using this again, and then never use that plugin. So don't tag your theme with the Gutenberg tag unless it actually does something with Gutenberg.
Now, I'll actually quote Sarah from her article because she raises a great point. To your point, she says, at the moment, advertising a theme as Gutenberg compatible is a temporary marketing strategy, as Gutenberg will soon lose its code name and become simply the editor. That special distinction will evaporate as soon as WordPress 5.0 lands, and Gutenberg support will quickly become a matter of basic WordPress compatibility. That's days right. of using it as a marketable feature are limited, and the pressure is on for theme developers to ensure their products are ready.
Yep, I agree 100%. It's a 5-year plan before the term goes away, but the long term in this is, it doesn't provide any real value.
Well, and I thought this was an interesting comment on the article by Matthew Harris. He says, nice idea, but there's absolutely no way that the name Gutenberg would disappear, especially if the official alternative is calling it the editor. You can't search for the editor in Google, as it's too vague. It's not clear to the millions of existing users if by the editor, the writer means the original editor or the new editor. So every article would have to say the editor, and then you know the Gutenberg the editor. So, you know, it starts getting a little convoluted there. So he says, I can't see it happening. It would be stupid of them to try and force it. Gutenberg is a great, unique name, and it lets people embrace it, discuss it, and advertise it easily. And somebody else commented that Gutenberg is a product name, much like TinyMCE. What you see is what you get, and et cetera. It's a unique type of editor that doesn't just work anywhere, but on the platforms that support it only. So a couple of arguments suggesting that, you know, let's keep the Gutenberg name around, even though it is the editor. And this kind of harkens back all the way back to a ticket that Morten Rand Hendrickson created. And we talked about this, the branding issue. Right. What's going to happen after Gutenberg merges with WordPress? And now we just simply have the editor. What about all the resources? What about all the things that were marketed around Gutenberg and all the, and all these other issues? And it's kind of, well, now it's coming back. That conversation is coming around again.
It's, you know what, that conversation never stopped. And to be clear, and you know, to commit to my opinion again on the show, I don't think the Gutenberg name is going to go away. WordPress Core will abstract some things around it, and that's fine. But Gutenberg is going to stay Gutenberg the same way that the Requests API stays Requests, and SimplePy is SimplePy, and TinyMCE is TinyMCE.
I mean, it's already an NPM package, so that other projects like Drupal can actually implement Gutenberg. So Gutenberg's not, I don't think it can go away at this point.
I don't think it can either. It's going to stick. You may not need to see it, and developers and theme designers, if Gary Pendergast does a good enough job of integrating this smoothly, which we'll talk about in the show a little bit later, then most people won't even notice the word Gutenberg. The deeper dive, the developers or the software engineers that do that digging, they're going to see the word Gutenberg quite a bit, probably in a lot of filters and some JavaScript in some places, but most users will never see that word or never know that it's there. Just the same thing as people will use the Requests API or SimplePy or TinyMCE or anything else. There's a lot that's in WordPress Core right now that you have come to just understand exists. People that use jQuery, like, how often do you type the word jQuery or instead just use a dollar sign? And occasionally you'll type it, but otherwise it's just a part of your life. And so Gutenberg will be another one of those things for a lot of people. For some people it won't be, but for a lot of people it will.
And speaking of Gutenberg, Matt Mullewag has announced plans for WordPress 5.0, a 5.0 release plan, so that WordPress 5.0 is going to become a little less TBD with this plan. And Matt Mullewag released a tentative estimate for a release candidate to ship in November. He says, with known knowns and known unknowns, I believe we will be at RC in about a month. Mullenweg said, however, I'll be keeping a close eye on feedback during the beta process and adjust as needed and keep the community fully up to date with our best estimate. Now, so far, the Gutenstats blog shows that Gutenberg has passed 490,000 active installs, which is pretty good. And the Classic Editor plugin is up to around 400,000 active installs. And Mullenweg also said that if they keep the 5.0 release to strictly 4.9.8 plus Gutenberg, that they will have a release that is both major and a non-event in terms of new code. He says it's all battle-tested. In some ways, 5.0 is already de facto out in the wild with some forward-looking hosts already installing and activating Gutenberg for new installs. And he also outlined or designated 11 people, other leads, to head up various focuses, including design, JavaScript, REST API, triage, and several other factors that's going to help out with merging Gutenberg into WordPress. So with all of this said, and also there's also mentioning the fact that there somebody will also be heading the 2019 default theme. So we did get confirmation that there's going to be a new default theme, and I bet you that will be Gutenberg compatible, ready for WordPress 5.0. But so we finally get a little bit of a timetable. It still looks like the goal is to get WordPress 5.0 and Gutenberg in the hands of everybody by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of comments I've seen so far are like pulling their hair out already because it's the Christmas holiday. There's a lot of off time. There's a lot of busy things going on at that time of year. And the last thing people want is for something major like Gutenberg and WordPress 5.0 to be released around the holiday season. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't stopped WordPress before, and I don't think it will this time either, if all goes well.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show before, and WordPress and BBPress specifically, but has a history of releasing during the holiday season. And so that shouldn't be expected really to truly change very much.
I mean, 5.0 is not your typical release. I mean, this is the editor. This is a huge change to WordPress. So
I get it. However, WordPress's, I mean, as much as it has a lot of reputations for
why can't WordPress release things based on my timeline?
Well, your timeline is something I think not a lot of people really consider, other than probably yourself, Jeff. But
okay.
But the WordPress's commitment to backwards compatibility and the team of people that have been maintaining and working on WordPress for the number of years that WordPress has been around should hopefully help with the folks that are a little worried about releasing during the holidays, that it is just another release. It is going to be okay, regardless of whether or not it's December or June. It's never a good time to release a major version of software because everyone already has a million other things going on. And so if you keep pushing releases back for other better, more appropriate times, you'll never find one. And the most appropriate day to release software is today. If you think it's ready to go, it's ready to go.
Well, someone to that effect, one user commented on the article on the Tavern, you know, begging Matt that it's not ready. They said that they would like to believe and trust that the approach to the release of WordPress 5.0 would keep everyone's best interests in mind. I mean, she said, sadly, that does not seem to be the case. However, Matt Mullenweg responded to the comment, thanking her for her feedback, and says, quote, "I don't want to release unless it's ready either. If it's not ready today, and that's why it's not released right now, but when it is ready, we'll put it out there," end quote.
So this is one of the things that I read between some lines in Matt's posting.
Okay.
And Sarah quoted it in the Tavern article, but this is the quirky John's maybe paying too much attention part of the show where Matt says, and Sarah quotes, "If we keep the 5.0 release to strictly 4.9.8 plus Gutenberg, we will have a release that is both major and a non-event in terms of new code." So here's what I think is interesting, is there's a ton of stuff that has gone into WordPress trunk expecting for that to be WordPress 5.0. The PHP code sniffing and standardization has gone into trunk. The multi-site blog meta table has gone into trunk. There are a bunch of other features that have gone into trunk expecting for those to be part of WordPress 5.0. But if what the reality of 5.0 is that it's only what is in 4.9 plus Gutenberg, means that there is a ton of code changes that are already in trunk that would need to be reverted in order for this to become 4.9 plus Gutenberg.
Where's George Sakai? He would say, "Oh my."
It is a oh my. And so one, this was just a Matt not using the right version. It is very possible that Matt meant trunk instead of 4.9 plus Gutenberg. And so I'm not trying to speculate here too much, but if Matt really meant 4.9 point X plus Gutenberg, means that there are several features that were slated for 5.0 that will get bumped. And so Matt didn't say that either, but sometimes not saying something, it doesn't mean you're not confirming something. And so this is a point that I think deserves clarification for the multi-site team, for the code.
Something that definitely needs to be brought up in a dev meeting by somebody.
That is right. And so I thought that was an interesting way to put it, because Matt's not wrong that if all we do is bolt Gutenberg on and nothing else, then 5.0 is a pretty easy release.
But yeah, then it's not a big deal because half a million sites out there are already using the Gutenberg plugin. So
and then technically what this does, which is something we've touched on a previous episode, is in order to actually pull this off would probably mean that WordPress Trunk, which traditionally we've talked about in a previous episode, is like the next major version of WordPress, would have to become a 5.0 branch or a 5.1 branch of code that then we revert everything on a trunk. We take all the work that went into trunk and we move it to a new 5.1 branch. We ship 5.0 out of trunk after everything's been reverted back to a 4.9 branch. And then we work on 5.1 with all of these new features in a new branch that isn't trunk. And so in the ways that people are used to the difference between Subversion as a version control system and Git as a version control system, this would be easier to do in Git, but we're not using Git for managing the WordPress code base. And so Subversion means that this actually is a major code move the first time in WordPress's history that we've had to reverse every single thing that's in trunk all the way back to meet the current branch just to ship a minor release or a minor feature to then re-merge everything in for the next release. And so, again, this is one of those nobody else in the world needs to care inside baseball kind of problems. But for the people that are paying attention, if what Matt said really is true, this is a big deal for core contributors to have to backpedal a little bit on their own timelines for things that were in trunk, expecting them to be in 5.0, and knowing that those actually have to wait until 5.1, which might not happen until March or July or who knows when. So I'm curious to see what the results of this are.
I've not seen any of that brought up in the dev meeting, but we'll have to see what the dev meeting happens today. So we'll have to see if somebody brings it. And if I wasn't here, I'd bring it up just to see.
If I wasn't here, I'd bring it up too. But we'll see who does. See if it comes up.
The first batch of tickets for WordCamp Europe 2019, which will be held in Berlin, Germany, on June 20th to the 22nd, were sold out in record time. This was back back on Monday. They released 250 standard tickets. And those sold out within 3 hours and 9 minutes. So there is a little bit of demand for WordCamp Europe. The second batch of standard tickets went on sale today. So if you're interested in attending WordCamp Europe 2019 today or whenever you listen to the show, go check out the website. I imagine the second batch is going to sell out quicker than the first batch.
For all of the the grammarists that are listening to the show, I believe more quickly is quicker is not really doesn't really sound right. More quickly, at least, okay.
But
I can see scowling at me, so I'm going to stop talking about it now.
the event's going to be held at the Astro Hotel and Congress Center. They have a max capacity of 12,000, but the organizers expect to get about 2,500 to 3,000 attendees. That's a lot of WordPressers in one building. And there's also a discount like available if you want to stay at the hotel.
What eventually we'll have 12,000 people at WordCamp Europe. That's going to be a thing that happens.
Man, oh, man. How about
that? Happens at conferences all over the world. There's Dairy Expo is happening in Wisconsin right now, and they get 70,000 people. So
that's Dairy Expo and Wisconsin in the same sense.
I know. But
why are you there?
I've been there.
You should be doing WordPress Weekly Live from Dairy Expo.
I think it was maybe last year or 2 years ago I was there. It was incredible. I mean, an expo is a little bit different than a conference, there's still the talks and workshops and everything going on there.
I bet you went up there and you ordered a flight of cheese, so all these different cheeses.
Naturally. Of course I wouldn't. Like, that is what we do here. Of course I'm going there. That is why Carrie and I are sticking around in Wisconsin. That is just a part of who we are now. So, yeah, Dairy Expo is great. Shout out to Dairy Expo.
It is October, which means the 5th annual Hacktoberfest has kicked off. Now, they've updated the rules. It used to be you could get a T-shirt for successfully submitting 4 pull requests to an open source library on GitHub. Now they've changed it so you have to do 5 pull requests, and it's you only get a t-shirt if you're part of the first 50,000 people who submit the required number of pull requests. The other thing is that DigitalOcean, along with Twilio, they're new partners now with GitHub, helping to sponsor this event. And Hacktoberfest is pretty cool. It's all about trying to get people to contribute to open source projects on GitHub, mostly if it's your first time. So if you really want to get involved, if you want to know what it's like to contribute to an open source project by submitting a pull request, there's a lot of open source projects out there that could use your sort of good first bug, as WordPress has, type of contribution. So check them out. So far, there are at least 17,000 issues that are designated for Hacktoberfest. So there's got to be something out there for everybody.
You know, we've the WordPress project historically has had a lot of success with Google Summer of Code and Google Code In and mentorship programs like these, where the opportunity to loop in newer contributors and help people get used to what the workflow is and everything was a ton of fun. The one thing I think is somewhat ironic, but it's hard to not mention, is that this is still GitHub and not GitLab or other things involved. And with Git sort of being this decentralized piece of software to help people write open source software, that I think it is a little ironic that this is something that only GitHub is currently contributing to. When with Matt's affiliation with GitLab and us talking about GitLab on the show a couple of times previously, that I would like to see more folks than just DigitalOcean, GitHub, and others.
I own got it. GitLab can fork Hacktoberfest.
Yes, they could, or they should. Or they should just participate right alongside with GitHub. There are plenty of open source projects that, for one reason or another, can't or choose not to use GitHub as their host for their code. And why should that matter? This should be available to everyone, not just GitHub, but anyone. And this is good. Adding Twilio is good. But Hacktoberfest is kind of, was this 5 years now, right? It's 5th year. So it's not going away. This is a mature event, and that it's time to loop everybody else in and get more people involved, especially for Git and GitHub, especially having switched to being owned by Microsoft now. Every time I hear GitHub, I just hear Microsoft. And so it's okay, but I would like to see other...
Well, every time you say GitLab, I think of Matt Mulloway.
Well, that's, you know, I think of GitLab and not Matt, but I get what you're saying.
Okay. All right. Don't think you call me weird?
No, I'm not. I mean, I would call you weird for other reasons, not this specific reason.
But that's not the issue.
I want to see more than GitHub. I want to see GitLab and others involved.
And I think a lot of other people would appreciate seeing that as well. Why just limit an event like this just to one type of repo or management area? So a little bit of hiring news. It's beneficial for WordPress. GoDaddy has hired on Mike Schroeder, known on the inside as the Shredder. He's known as GitSource on Twitter and Mike on WordPress and Slack instance. He's going to be joining Aaron Campbell, which GoDaddy has already hired to contribute to WordPress full time. So those who don't know, Schroeder has contributed to nearly every version of WordPress since 2011. He co-led the release of WordPress 3.9 in 2014. And in 2016, he actually led the release of WordPress 4.5. He's also an accomplished speaker who has presented on various topics at WordCamps across the world. Now, according to Gabriel Mays, who is the WordPress products and strategy leader at GoDaddy, Schroeder will continue to work on the media component in WordPress. He's done a lot of work and contributed a lot to that area of WordPress. Mm-hmm. He's going to be leading the WordPress hosting community work group that he's a member of, and he will also be helping to merge Gutenberg into WordPress 5.0. So congrats to Mike. I know he was formerly of DreamHost for a number of years. Now he's at GoDaddy. And GoDaddy is fully sponsoring or paying him to work and contribute to WordPress full time, which is probably a sweet gig.
It's probably, I can tell you from having hung out with Aaron Campbell multiple times that it is a pretty sweet gig. Specifically, I mean, GoDaddy's emphasis on security in general makes it a good fit for Aaron, but also being a full-time WordPress core contributor for a web hosting company is a great fit for the right hosting company. And so there are a number of agencies and companies that have been trying to hire full-time WordPress core contributors. But sometimes, and it is not uncommon for those positions to eventually kind of bleed over into not just doing WordPress core related things. Sometimes it's you're a liaison for or a figurehead for your company's involvement in the WordPress project. And so it's not like Aaron or Mike or anyone else that works at any other hosting company is simply just chugging away working on WordPress core. Sometimes the expectations are that you're reporting back to higher ups or the systems team or the security team at GoDaddy or other places, what it is that's going on in WordPress core specifically. And sometimes it's kind of a bad, it's kind of crossing the streams a little bit where the job of working in Slack all the time, in Track, in GitHub, on features and meetings in and related to WordPress core has very little to almost nothing to do with the inner workings or day-to-day mechanics of a company like GoDaddy or DreamHost or Bluehost or Flywheel or Pagely or Pantheon or anything else. And so to have a full-time core position, the goal should be, and I hope that it sounds like Mike's position is very similar to Aaron's, where it is really, truly 100% focused on WordPress core and not 95% WordPress core and 5% pinging back and reporting back to GoDaddy or Bluehost or your employer every little thing that you think is important for them to hear about what's going on at WordPress core. Like the difference, even though it doesn't seem like a lot, can be significant if you have to try to internally filter and regurgitate all of the inner workings of WordPress core releases and philosophies and conversations in Slack and core dev meetings back to a bunch of executives or people at your company. What's going on is not an easy task. If there was a full-time core contributor at Liquid Web, what exactly would be important to Liquid Web as a hosting company comparatively to what the priorities are for a contributor who's working on Gutenberg or the media library or whatever else? It just doesn't always make a lot of sense. And so, you know, switching from a contributor position at DreamHost to a contributor position at GoDaddy, again, speculating and not talking to Mike makes me think that, they lost a really valuable, super nice, very good person that they maybe could have valued better or treated better to switch from one company to another. Usually,
you know what I like about Mike?
So, well, I mean, aside from everything, what specifically do you like about Shredder?
He likes to laugh. The guy is always it seems like he's always in a good mood. He's a guy that I like talking to him, and it's pretty easy to get him to laugh. So
that's, and he is very insightful. He offers a lot of experience and history into decisions that have been made and why. He learned a lot. I've talked to him about releasing or running and managing a WordPress core release cycle.
We'll have to get him on the show sometime and talk to him. Ask him why do people call him Shredder? I mean, like, is it like a paper shredder, or is it like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shredder?
I mean, that's what I imagine is like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shredder.
Well, yeah, but he's a bad guy.
Yeah, he is a bad guy. But Mike is so good that he kind of, I imagine, like a good evil Shredder. Like if Shredder was a good guy.
Okay, grammar people.
Like you still have claws for hands, and you're still a ninja warrior, kind of. But a good one. That's what I imagine.
You're welcome.
We should have Mike on the show. I haven't talked to Mike in a while, probably since WordCamp US, I don't know, a little bit ago. So I would like to have Shredder on the show again. Why don't you make that happen for me?
I'd like to have him on the show and talk about the media component, something a lot of people are wondering, why hasn't there been anything done? I've always mentioned this on the show before, and I've watched it, but last WordCamp US, Mike and I believe it was Tammy Lister did a joint presentation on the media component of WordPress. And, you know, according to their research, even though it appears that WordPress hasn't had a major release dedicated to the media component, it's still up there in terms of the features it offers and some of the other aspects of its user experience compared to other platforms that are available. Now, I'd say one of the biggest complaints from users is that there's a lack of ability to organize your media content in WordPress. It just becomes this big blob, and it's hard to search through. It's hard to categorize. Well, you can't add tags or categories and things of that nature to the WordPress media library. And I think that's where a lot of people would like to see some work done there. But who knows? Maybe in the coming years.
I have a plugin called WP.
Oh, there are plenty of plugins that add this.
Plenty of them. Felix Arnst has one. He has a GitHub repo that kind of serves as a core patch for how media categories could be integrated into WordPress core. But categorization, again, is kind of only one part of it. Like the file system in general for how they're stored in multi-site by sites and in single site, for each individual site, kind of categorized by year and month. There's a lot that someone could choose not to like about the media library. There's a whole ton of complications and things that plugins like Easy Digital Downloads and WooCommerce have to jump through in order to make their downloads work in a way that is protected and not 100% totally public for folks. There's a lot of things in the media library that could be improved, but in general, the media
Gutenberg
library
will fix all of it. That's all.
Gutenberg will fix none of that, Jeff.
Okay,
it will, not even close. It fixes none of those. Okay, concerns.
Well, it fixes everything else.
I think the media library is. All right, so I'm gonna have an unpopular opinion about the media library since we're talking about it, and we still have time on the show for me to go on a rant. Is I don't dislike the media library really at all. I don't dislike it in any way. I think that Coop and everyone else that worked on the media library back in 2010 or 11, when that was, kind of did a really good job at building a media library that has so far lasted for 8 years. It feels pretty much right. It works really elegantly for all of the places that you may or may not want to attach some piece of media. It's flexible enough where you can manipulate the buttons and the text and the sidebars and areas in enough ways where it feels right for all of these weird contexts that you may want to interact with the media library in. I don't dislike the media library all that much. And Scott Taylor from the New York Times, a WordPress core contributor for a long time, put a bunch of under-the-hood improvements into the media library, allowed file types, a lot of the MIME type stuff that Joe McGill and others have worked on for a long time. The media library has seen a lot of under-the-hood updates that the UI has elegantly adapted to without a lot of work. So I will be the person who sticks my neck out to say that the media library is pretty great. And I have struggled to find one on the web that I have liked any more than WordPress's. I really like it still.
Well, and there, I mean, the thing that was surprising, well, you keep your media local in WordPress, but a lot of other platforms, when you use your media library, it's not actually a media library. You're actually uploading your content to a different service. So whether that's Flickr, Instagram, or what have you, those actually become your media libraries, and you have to deal with their user and interfaces.
WordPress is flexible enough where there are a ton of plugins that provide Amazon S3 support or Dropbox support or anything else where Jetpack and Photon integrate with it deeply to intercept images and provide scalable, better ones than what WordPress Core provides out of the box. I mean, it's what comes with WordPress is a great interface and subset of media handling that works really well for most users that is still flexible enough to let people adapt it to their needs. Like the media library, I still think is really, really good.
Jason Cohen, the founder of WP Engine, recently published a post called Gutenberg, Believe in the Beauty of Your Dreams, over on the WPEngine.com blog. And he sort of talks about Gutenberg and the acquisition of StudioPress back in June and what it is they're working on. In fact, they have now released a new theme, a Gutenberg first theme, they call it. Breakthrough Pro. It's the first Genesis built theme WP Engine has released since their acquisition of StudioPress earlier this year. He says that the theme was built with today's creative digital agencies in mind, and in addition to being optimized for mobile devices, Breakthrough is fully compatible with Gutenberg, and it would also be updated after the release of Gutenberg, along with all other StudioPress themes, to include additional features which will allow users to take full advantage of the power of Gutenberg. And further along the article, he also talks about the slow and steady approach that they're taking with Gutenberg and what they're doing to educate their users and work with the Gutenberg team to try and improve it. But he says one thing in here that I think like sort of hit home with me, and he says that Gutenberg should not be used as an excuse to refrain from updating to WordPress 5.0 when it's released. Quite the contrary. Our hope is that Gutenberg will be the reason many people update to 5.0 once it is made available. We hope it will also bring in many new users to WordPress from other solutions because of how easy it is to build post pages and take sites to a new level.
Yep, Jason's right. It's a yin and a yang. There are going to be people who are going to choose to abandon it because they're not into it, but by golly, there will be two for every one that leaves. Two that come, and for everyone that leaves. I agree with Jason completely. Gutenberg is the right time and the right place to make this work. And kudos to all of our friends that have been on the show multiple times at StudioPress for quickly adapting everything to work with it, because it's a lot of work and tight timelines to make these things happen, particularly with an acquisition. It's great to see Breakthrough Pro available, and they're gonna kill it probably with this, I think.
So we have about 12 minutes left in the show. So we have 12 minutes of rant time. We could end early, or we could say whatever's on our mind. Me personally, I've been reading through the feed reader for the first time in a while, and you know, something I like to say is that when there's a security issue with WordPress, or there is word or news of an attack that's going on based around WordPress, the writing about it on a lot of different websites is crap, really, it's to crap. Be honest with you. It's hard to know what the source is, what's really going on. I mean, basically what it comes down to is in many of these articles, you end up leaving with the thought that, well, it's WordPress's fault. There's a problem with WordPress. The security vulnerability lies within WordPress. Like a recent example is one of the United Nations websites, I think it's South Sudan, there's a path discoverability vulnerability, and the site was running on WordPress, but they were using a application, or there's a specific part of the site where you upload your resume for a job posting, and through path disclosure, which I believe was more of a server side misconfiguration because it was showing the path, you could actually locate the uploads folder, and you can actually look at the different files people were uploading of their CVs and their applications. But it wasn't exactly a WordPress vulnerability, but the way some of these sites wrote about what happened, that's the conclusion you kind of come away with. So a little bit of a rant there that when you read about these issues, like if you're not reading on like Security and maybe WordFence and some of these other sites that generally do a pretty good job of explaining these vulnerabilities and you know, what exactly is happening. A lot of these other sites, it's just a lot of misinformation.
Right. Well, and the thing with reporting a security vulnerability is, like, it not only responsible disclosure, and what that means is be somewhat secretive and not tell the world of the thing that you found. And so that is step one. And for some security researchers, in my experience, that is where they feel their duty ends as a security researcher. I have told you about this thing, and now
the clock is running.
The clock starts. That's right. And that is a problem, honestly. Like,
yeah, we've talked about this before.
Yep. And recently, a friend of mine who runs a pub here where I live got robbed. They stole cash for their pool that they put money into, and all they did was break in the back door, steal the cash, and leave. And so it kind of shows that someone identified a security flaw in my buddy's physical security.
Which happened to be a back door.
Which happened to literally be a back door into this person's pub. There was one very specific target that the attacker had in mind, and they were able to exploit this vulnerability to steal this person's money. Like, the real world implication of this is when they catch this person, they are held accountable in a court of law. But when someone breaks into your website, it is rare that someone is held accountable for these things. We treat these things like they are non-serious issues. But the real world reality is that sometimes if the dollar amount is high enough, people go to prison for a very long time. If someone breaks into your Easy Digital Downloads store and steals people's account information, that is a serious crime. Security researchers that put a clock on what they report feel like they are doing the right thing and in creating a sense of urgency to have these things, issues, bugs resolved. And having been a security researcher, I can even say that I empathize deeply with sometimes this is their only tool, is to say, hey man, if you aren't going to fix this, I'm going to tell everyone in the world that this is a problem.
I reported this to you before lunch. I'm now eating dessert after dinner. It's still not fixed. I'm releasing it to the wild.
So that is not usually how this goes.
I know. Usually, I'm exaggerating, but yes. That's how it feels sometimes.
But, you know, if it's been 6 months, this security researcher hasn't been paid for 6 months on something they found. There's a bounty program, and they have rent to pay or a mortgage to pay or kids to put through school or whatever, and they're not getting paid out. And so they have frustrations that are legitimate and impactful to them. But if this person who's broke into my buddy's pub told everyone in the bar that this was a problem with the back door of his building, it was inevitable that he was going to get robbed. And so who ultimately is the most irresponsible in that situation? Is it irresponsible for the business owner to not properly secure their building? Yes. But is it more irresponsible to alert everyone that this vulnerability exists? I think yes. Like, if you go around pointing and telling everyone at something that is a vulnerability, it puts everyone at risk that is involved in that problem. And so it there is a certain amount of chaos that I think makes sense when it comes to reporting security vulnerabilities, but disclosing something publicly because you're frustrated that you feel like you're not being valued or listened to is a bad deal. It is a bad way to solve this problem. Like, and particularly if you continue to bully people and beat people up about it, like, if you're nice about it, if you offer to help even more and even more and even more, you're going to eventually burn yourself out. But also, that's what we're all doing when it comes to open source software, is helping make it better and improving it every day as much as we can. Inch the ball forward a little bit. And when someone chooses to go public with an issue that hasn't been fixed privately in any pieces of open source software, they are moving the ball backward. This is an interception against the opposing team. And that's a bad play generally across the board. And so I agree with you, man. Like, there is a whole bunch of people that are not really playing software security very well or very nicely. And it has real world implications for a lot of people.
And not to mention, everybody seems to have their own rule book on how things are supposed to be done, which doesn't help.
That's right.
We still got time left in the show, sir.
I've got one other thing I would bring up.
Okay.
Which is that I noticed on Twitter that Automattic
is doing their grand meetup
right now. And so I don't know how many tens of thousands of employees that Automattic has now, but they're all in Orlando. And I saw a tweet that they closed down the Diagon Alley at Universal Studios, the whole Harry Potter part. They just closed it down and have a private party going on for automaticians at this like very specific Harry Potter section of Universal Studios, which is awesome. Like, that's such a cool thing to be able to do. But the Sand Hills development team was just outside of Orlando a little bit last week.
And all you guys had was a beach house.
And all we had was a beach house. It was an amazing time. We all had a ton of fun. There were some sand flea issues. Some of us got a couple of bites by some sand fleas. It's not the most wonderful thing, but Orlando has its fair share of sand fleas too. The no-see-ums, as anyone that's from the area would recognize them as. But this was the first time that for our small company of, you know, the 20-some folks that we are at any given day, that I got to walk everybody through what Easy Digital Downloads 3.0 looks like. Everything from setting screens to APIs to everything. And so this is like 9 months worth of work almost at this point to cruise people through. And so we have a roadmap and some timelines.
No, it had to be pretty nice. Everybody working remotely and then you get together and then you have the PowerPoint presentation and now you get everybody on the team on the same page.
Yep. And like in a very comfortable in-person social sort of setting. Like when Automattic was 100 people, it was nice to crank through some things and show some things off. But, you know, when you're approaching 1,000 employees all in the same place, it's like a WordCamp with 1,000 people. How can you possibly
say if you hi saw to any everyone that you would want to? In the meetup, it's just a lot of presentations from core people, from General Ann. And Woody did a presentation there at the meetup. So
I just am reminded at like how valuable distributed for anyone who's listening who works for a distributed workforce, who including yourself, Jeff, right? Like, not excluded from this, but to really how important it is to see each other in person, sit down, have a cocktail, have a beer, have whatever you need to have, and hang out and like be in person in the same place at the same time with no obligation to do all of the other things that your job requirements entail. Like, just sit down and remember what you sound like, remember what your body language is, remember what the words are that you use and how you say them and what they mean, so that people can remember that for the next 6 months until they see you again, or the next year when you're going to be at a WordCamp with one another, or whatever that is, right? Like, you can get a lot done alone or remote or in a distributed way, but that yearly or annual meetup, and I don't care if it's automatic with 1,000 people or if it's a company of two or a team of two, just meeting in person a couple of times a year is healthy and like squashes a lot of these like communication bugs that happen from being ornery or working quickly to solve problems.
Yeah, like you tell someone to their face, hey, when you submitted this, I wanted to wring your neck.
Yep. And like, and we have an ability on the show every week to hang out with each other. And we don't forget what we sound like, right? Like we remember what words are like. And when we talk on or text message each other, we get to hang out with each other every week, but not everybody gets to do that. And so meeting in person really immediately
helps.
You're
about the only person I hang out with every week.
Oh, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Who knows?
I like to think that I try to keep you somewhat grounded and level-headed, but you know, it's only one day a week, man. There's six other days where I'm not paying really much attention to you. So
well, here we are in the beginning.
How you doing, Jeff?
Of October. It still feels like summer outside. That's pretty cool. So when we go woolly bear hunting next week or this week, it'll be cool. Woolly bear. Well, we'd like to go to the park. Really? The first person to see a woolly bear in the park wins. You know, my wife has a contest.
A woolly bear?
Yeah, it's like it's a brown and orange caterpillar.
Oh, we've talked about this. I remember talking about
it. They use the depending on how long the stripes are of orange determines the winter outlook.
That's right.
It's called something else. It has a different term. But we call it a woolly bear. It's called something else. Whatever. But anyway, so we're in October. Things will be ramping up at the end of the month. We've got Halloween, of course, and then
Fred Williams, the other friend of the show, right? At some point, somewhere, is a huge fan of Halloween.
Yes,
one of Studios' colors, black and orange, are based on his love of Halloween. So,
pretty much,
we're doing really cool stuff for Halloween here where we live. Do you guys do anything? Do you have trick or treaters where you live, Jeff? Anything like that?
No, because we live in between two developments, so on a main road. Yeah. And our driveway's long, so it doesn't make sense. We even stayed one year. We handed out candy at the end of the driveway. Everybody went through the development, so nobody came through.
No kidding.
Through our, so
we need whatever,
more candy for me.
We need a Halloween WordPress theme. We need some kind of color scheme for Halloween.
Jetpack, you turn it on, little bats fly across the screen instead of snowflakes.
Maybe it's out there. Maybe someone has built it, but I would love to see a black and orange, some Halloween style admin color schemes.
But what I was going to say is, you know, right now is the time for everybody to take a deep breath or a couple of deep breaths because, you know, Halloween comes up. We got the conferences coming up. WordCamp US comes up. November comes up. Black Friday, Thanksgiving, New Year's, Christmas. Now, October is like, for me, is the beginning of where time just really – things just ramp up in speed. And we've got a lot of things – that are going to be coming out in the WordPress Slam, EDD 3.0, probably WordPress 5.0, and who knows what else on top of all that, the WordCamp US. So take a deep breath, get calm, and prepare for the end of the year grind.
It's what's happening. That is
a little bit of fun along the way if you can.
Yep. I agree.
Take another deep breath and sort of collapse on the couch on January 1st.
Yep. Right.
And so we got as far as the guests for I think it's the 24th, we're going to have Topher DeRozan to talk about BigCommerce.
All right.
And later on this month, we'll have Vova Feldman on the show. And we'll see who else we can get on. Maybe we'll get Mike on. Who knows? That'd be cool to talk to Mike later this year.
Yeah, there were a couple of people we had lined up. Starting to run out of year to like line people up to be on the show. Have you ever had two guests on the show, like two separate back-to-back guests? Not that we want to turn this into like the Tonight Show where we've just got like a bunch of guests.
Two different guests on one show?
Yeah. You ever done that before?
I don't think I have.
You know, it's a year of surprises. Maybe we should try and have some back-to-back guests together and have a WordPress Weekly Variety Hour.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And like, they could sit in on the chair.
They could sit in on the chair. Guests. Yeah,
that would be fun. You and your ideas of wanting me to turn this. You think I'm the next Jenny Carson? But we'll see.
I think you are. I think you should be.
So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter if you care, if you want to do so, at JEFFR0.
What about you, John? Twitter and GitHub at JJJ and JJJ.blog, where I still would love help with someone to make my blog beautiful again.
Your blog needs to be Gutenberg ready.
It does need to be Gutenberg ready. I made a Twitter bootstrap theme a long time ago. It's treated me well, but time to spruce it up. So if anybody out there wants to help me out with a prettier, fancier, nicer blog theme, I'd love the help, because I haven't had the time to prioritize it myself. So
everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John.